Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
It's such a joy to write with your favorite pen. I always have these black gel pens every night. Democratic Governor Jared Polis' favorite pen is the one that he uses to veto bills from progressive Democrats. He killed another batch minutes ago. Big financial companies had leaned hard on the governor to veto a bill that would change how credit card swipe fees are calculated. The bill would have banned credit card companies from charging those extra processing fees on the sales tax portion of transactions. In his veto message, Polis sided with credit unions and banks, who argued that the bill would be too hard to implement and would force small businesses to update their point-of-sale systems or carry out separate transactions. The Colorado Restaurant Association just blasted Polis over this veto. The bill had the potential to save local businesses a lot of money on fees. Polis vetoed another bill backed by progressive Democrats that would have allowed Coloradans to sue ICE officers for civil rights violations during immigration enforcement actions. The governor said the bill had too many legal risks and didn't do enough to hold federal officers accountable for violating civil rights in other settings, like at protests or in prisons. All three Republicans running for governor debated together for the only time in their race on 9 News last night. The front runner, ministry leader Victor Marx, has been ducking debates and forums. Last night's debate indicated why. Marx did not offer details on policy. When his opponent said that he was a con man, a fraud, and a liar, he responded that they're mean. And this is how Marx answered the most fundamental question about whether his extraordinary claims about his life story are true.
You claim that you've been all around the world, armed to the teeth, rescuing women and children from captivity, that you've stopped human smugglers at the Mexico border and made them pay a price, that you as a civilian called in a U.S. military airstrike that killed 70 ISIS fighters, that you were the first American into Gaza during the war with Israel, that you've done 150 high-risk missions and every one has been a success. You told me last week that it's all true, and that you don't need to prove it to anyone. But you're talking to voters now. How should voters decide whether you've lived one of the most extraordinary lives in human history, or whether you're a liar and a fraud?
Can we back up to her for 1 second?
Please, please answer the question, sir.
I will. But this, I'll make a little informal complaint. The folks at home don't want to hear about her past and what she did. That's not gonna make a lick of difference to those who are having trouble putting food on the table, Kyle, paying their electricity bill, having to try to figure out how they send their kids to school.
Sir, how much of your time do you plan to burn before you answer the question of whether you tell the truth?
Do I tell the truth?
How should voters discern whether you have had one of the most extraordinary lives in human history or whether you are a liar and a fraud?
Well, simply go back. I have 20 years of videos and documentation and people. We just had our head of security in Iraq call in a video today. The proof is just in people and what we document. I thought it was funny how you said when you came to the training center, the pictures and what we showed and things, it wasn't good enough for you. I can't help it if I've had an extraordinary life. I'm an ordinary fella, and starting from my childhood all the way to now, me standing up on a stage running for governor, Reagan, I said I was going to talk about you, come seats. This little dog, she's going to go bite you right now, Kyle. She was in Syria and Iraq. So is she lying too?
Well, the dog's not running for governor. You're running for governor, and you spent precious little time answering the question other than to say that folks have to take the word of you and your staff for your accomplishments.
No, I said thousands
Mr. Bottoms,
of
a question
people,
for you is,
Kyle.
You watch that full Republican primary debate in the race for Colorado governor on the Next YouTube channel. Democratic candidates for governor debate right here on 9 News tomorrow night at 6. We will again be live from the University of Denver. Now, the Dems who want to run Colorado constantly talk about fighting against President Trump. Students in DU's campus told our Marshall Zellinger They don't care.
Would any of you, you can raise your hand, vote for a candidate for governor based on something Trump-related?
Well, so much for all those political ads telling voters that Attorney General Phil Wiser or U.S. Senator Michael Bennet is the best governor to take on policy decisions by President Trump.
It seems the race is who's more anti-Trump, in a way.
I've heard that, yes. I'm not sure that's necessarily what I would personally be looking for as a younger voter. As a political science major, I'm really curious to hear more about what their specific policy solutions are.
Senior Adeline Braun is waiting for Thursday's Democratic debate on the DU campus to hear policy differences between two candidates with few policy differences.
I would care more about what they'd say on housing, what they'd say on sustainable transportation, what they'd say on providing jobs for students who are recently graduated.
Master's student Taylor Faulkner's main concern is how she's going to afford her first home.
I know that we've had a lot of state legislation to try to build more affordably, but that takes time, and I'll be graduating in a year.
A unique factor in the Democratic race is that Bennet is still a sitting senator. If he loses, he goes back to the Senate. If he wins and becomes governor, he has said Governor Bennet will pick Senator Bennet's replacement, and he has not provided a list of who that might be.
Should you know, before you vote in the primary, who he might be choosing from to take his seat?
For sure.
I feel like definitely. That could even help you know what to do when voting for the governor. I feel like that could be a helpful thing for that decision as well.
How do you take the idea that people think this Democratic primary is the decision for governor? Whoever wins between Wiser and Bennet is going to be governor.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think Victor Marks has a slight chance. I don't think Scott Bottoms or Barb Kirkmeyer have much of a chance. Odds are it's going to be either Michael Bennet or Phil Wiser.
Here's something the students told me that I found enlightening, and I'll whisper it because it could impact the station's bottom line. They don't care about or believe political ads. They assume they're misleading, and they're not traditional TV viewers, and they say the ads are not popping up where they're scrolling on their phones, Kyle.
There are digital ads. Curious to see if they have the same messages. Marshall Zellinger, thank you. So, Monday, June 8th, 6 p.m., after that Democratic debate here tomorrow, the final debate in our series this primary season, the Democratic candidates in Colorado Congressional District 8. This is the race to face Republican Congressman Gabe Evans, Manny Rutenau, and Shannon Byrd. Debate live on our air, 6 p.m. on Monday.
June is our severe weather month, and today it was warm with another round of afternoon storms. Temperatures in the 70s and lower 80s, enough to fuel severe storms dropping 1-inch diameter hail from Weld County to Douglas County. These storms are still going strong out there, impacting travel on I-70, I-76, and just east of the metro area tonight. Most of them are starting to fall apart now, which is great news. The winds are really picking up, providing that low-level moisture to keep some of these storms going for a few more hours. But the trend tomorrow is for warming and drying, and that's going to get us into the 90s on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Storms are back in the forecast early next week ahead of the second heat wave. It's moving in the middle part of next week.
Today starts the 7th year of your Word of Thanks microgiving. It was 6 years ago today, June 3rd, 2020, when your first weekly microgiving campaign raised $90,000 to restore and repair Civic Center Park after protests turned to riots. Since then, you have raised $18 million to improve our state. This week, let's help feed our neighbors in a rural part of Colorado. This week's 6th anniversary Word of Thanks microgiving campaign supports Gunnison Country Food Pantry. That nonprofit keeps working families fed in Gunnison, Crested Butte, and the surrounding rural areas. They have a tourism-based economy out there and a high cost of living, and it means that families who rely on the food pantry are often working several jobs and still can't make ends meet. The nonprofit serves 1 in 5 families in Gunnison County with their no-cost grocery program and take-home food packs for kids. The folks at the Gunnison Country Food Pantry told me that they're set up to catch people who fall through the cracks of government assistance, but as more people fall through wider cracks lately, they have just been inundated. But the people in the Gunnison Valley are not going to let their neighbors go hungry. Let's see if we can rally the whole state to help them out this week. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to get the link to donate. You have proven how $5 helps
when a ton of people do it together. And you know I'm never going to ask you to give to a cause I don't support myself, so I'll match the first 50 donations of $5 to get us going. Coming up now on 8,000 of you signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. You put in your info one time, pick a donation amount each month. Your donations automatically split among all the nonprofits we feature. And lately, that has added almost $50,000 to every weekly campaign.
We expect all of our streets to be public streets and have access to public streets and be able to use them.
A town in the metro area wants to keep outsiders off its streets, so it's planning to put up gates over public roadways. And as this state celebrates its 150th birthday, we remember the Mexican-American workers who helped build it into the place we know. The U.S. Department of Education is threatening to pull funding from Jeffco schools over their policies on transgender students. The department's Civil Rights Division sent its first warning in March, accusing Jeffco of violating federal anti-discrimination laws, gave the district 10 days to reverse policies allowing transgender students to play on sports teams or choose overnight school field trip accommodations that match their gender identity. The feds claim those policies have led to dozens of trans students playing on district athletic teams, claims that the district called, quote unquote, erroneous. Today, the Trump administration sent a follow-up letter warning that enforcement will happen in 10 days if the district doesn't abandon those policies. Consequences could involve pulling federal funding. The school district says the department's claims about male students playing on girls' sports teams is not true and that state law requires the district to accommodate students based on gender identity. The district says they're trying to work with the Office of Civil Rights to come up with an agreement, but the OCR walked away from that. The district is asking the feds to come back to the negotiating table to keep talking about the issue. You ever been to Bomar? It's nice. Now stop doing that. That fancy little town in the metro area doesn't want us peasants driving through anymore. They want to put up entry gates on public streets. Our Spencer Soischer got inside to bring you this report.
Sure, you've heard of gated communities, but what about gated towns?
So I heard from one of our residents that our neighbor to the town of Bomar was wanting to put up some gates to restrict access to their streets.
Littleton Mayor Kyle Schlachter says his city had no idea about Bomar's decision to gate off their town. The small town with big homes sandwiched between Littleton and Denver has approved plans to install new gates that will keep everyone else off the public roads that go through its town. Neighbors would get a tag on their car to automatically lift the gate, and a code for their visitors.
Literally locked out of the conversation and the access in the right of way.
Schlachter and Denver Mayor Mike Johnston wrote a letter to Bomar this week saying stop the gates or we'll place barriers outside them, blocking the neighbors' most convenient ways in and out.
We have residents in Littleton that use those streets, and I know residents of Bomar use Littleton streets.
This is not the first you're not welcome in our town move by Bomar. In 2021, the town put up a sign saying a street does not cut through to Sheridan, but it definitely does.
Not quite the same as actually restricting access.
Perhaps not everyone in Bomar wants to keep outsiders outside, like the people who put up this sign with a QR code to keep the entry points open.
Oh, someone spray painted over it.
Bomar's decision is legally questionable.
Nine News legal analyst Scott Robinson says state statute gives cities and towns 36 different powers over traffic coming through their towns.
Complete closure, except to local residents and those they want to invite. Not in the statute.
Is it legal? TBD. But why shouldn't people from Littleton or Denver be able to drive on a public road?
That is the question I ask them as well.
I reached out to the Bomar mayor and every single one of their trustees today. The town couldn't provide comment in time for our deadline. Bomar receives state tax dollars for roads, which includes vehicle registration fees, but also money from gas taxes at the pump. Since last summer, the state's given them $27,000.
If you've never been, go drive through while you still can. It's real nice. Spencer, thank you.
Meadows is the term that they came up with to describe, like, the track laborers.
Railroads powered westward expansion, thanks in part to the Mexican-Americans who helped build them. Trains can transport us back in time. A new exhibit in Golden takes us back to meet the people who built the rails across the West and shaped our nation. Our Byron Reed has that.
Trains really tell the story.
Trains can connect us to history.
It really just connects it all. Like past and present, you get to see how relevant it still is.
It's part of our past Jasmine Robertson doesn't want us to miss.
So we have some track tools that would have been used to construct the railroad.
Robertson is the curator of exhibits for the Colorado Railroad Museum, a space where they preserve one of the oldest methods of transportation.
Just to engage and see that not just like how, you know, labor intensive the track building was, but like the cultures behind the people that built them.
Their bilingual exhibit, Traqueros, Mexican Track Workers and the American Railroad.
Traqueros is the term that they came up with to describe like the track laborers, kind of Spanglish.
Tells the stories of Mexican and Mexican-American laborers who built and maintained America's railroads.
And they accounted for two-thirds of track work in the Southwest, Midwest, and Central Plains from 1880 through 1930.
Their work laid the foundation for the nation's rail infrastructure and helped drive expansion across the West.
And without the railroads, you would not have had like Colorado or the mining communities.
The exhibit brings those stories to life through artifacts, photographs, and personal connections.
About my dad, Marciano Aguayo.
Including one Colorado family's history.
Marciano Aguayo is a traquero that we have featured here. He worked for the Union Pacific Railroad for 32 years.
Robertson hopes visitors walk away with a deeper understanding that connection goes beyond the tracks.
It's so nice to be able to have a platform in which we can show like the significance of their railroad work in Colorado and across the nation.
For Next.
It's been so rewarding.
I'm Byron Reed.
Back with your feedback about last night's debate. Food's expensive these days, I don't need to tell you that, and even more so in rural areas in Colorado, even more so in tourism-driven areas with their higher cost of living. That's where Gunnison Country Food Pantry comes in. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to join me and a bunch of others in supporting the food pantry that serves the Gunnison and Crested Butte area. They're dealing with a $200,000 budget gap due to the loss of federal funding. That is a lot of money to make up. But you also raise a lot of money through your weekly Word of Thanks microgiving, an average of more than $50,000 each week this year. Feedback about last night's debate via text. So disappointed with the moderators for the debate last night. The biased questions and accusations were uncalled for. This from Paul, who wrote in to say, thank you for how you managed yourself and the debate. That must have been the awkward experience of a lifetime. I will say this, Paul, looking somebody in the eye and asking them about things that they have said and done is never awkward. It's just my job. See you for that debate tomorrow night, 6 p.m., 9 News.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live, same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.